My name is Jake D. Floyd. I'm a retired Air Force vet. And today's date is May 23rd, 2019.
Hi, I'm Cherie Floyd Bailey, and I'm here with my dad on the Military Initiative for StoryCorps. Today's date is May 23rd, 2019. I'm 49 years old, and Daddy is 90. He'll be 91 on Memorial Day. So, Dad, I was born after you retired from the military, so I really didn't have the active military experience that my sisters, Connie and Cynthia, had when they were growing up. But I always did have this strong awareness of service and duty and really, really staunch patriotism that you and Mother, too, gave to all of us. So I was really intrigued because you did not speak about your experiences during your active duty time while I was growing up, but it wasn't until my children started having assignments where they had to interview someone and they chose you to interview for school assignments that I learned about some of your military experiences and situations that you went through. So I wanted to just ask you, what do you remember about the day you enlisted?
Well, it was a cold, cold day in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and it was so cold. That's the main thing that I remember about that, because I had never been so cold in my life as I was that particular day.
And when was that?
February 7, 1947.
And you just chose to enlist?
Well, I was born and raised on the farm, and during the early days of World War II, I could see these aircraft flying over at a real low altitude. You could almost identify what the guy was wearing on his face, eyewear and so forth at that time. They were so low, and I decided right then that that's what I wanted to be, a member of the United States Air Force, or Army Air Corps it was then.
And how did you tell your family and friends that you were joining or had joined up?
I did not really tell anyone that I had joined the Army Air Corps per se. I think when they sent my clothes back, my civilian clothing back home, that they found out where I was and that I was in the Army Air Corps.
So when you went to Fort Bragg to enlist that day, you stayed and started?
No, that was after I had enlisted in Lumberton, the county seat. Mm-hmm. Then the next day I went on to Fort Bragg.
Okay. And so how did you choose the Army Air Corps, just from your experience of being intrigued by seeing the airplanes fly over the farm?
Mostly, yes, but mainly I had seen the activities and involved by the Army and the Air Force, the things they do and so forth, and I decided that I didn't want to crawl on my belly in the mud and all that just to be a member of the armed forces. So I chose the Army Air Corps because that's what I wanted to be.
Well, what was basic training like back then?
Well, back then we really took 23 weeks of military basic, and until we became a separate branch of service, and then it was only 8 weeks. Of all it was familiarization now. So, but then we took rifle training, range, everything, bivouac, the whole works, under a Marine flight marcher. So he was pretty rough on us. We ran that mile every morning before breakfast, so we were in pretty good shape.
And do you think your basic training did a good job of preparing you for the environment you were going to be in?
Yes, definitely.
How did it differ from your life before you enlisted?
Well, I didn't work as hard as I did on the farm. And what we did do was, it was quite different. It wasn't related wholly to the present-day airmen in training. Today, all they do is just familiarization, and that's it. None of the bivouac and not small arms fire and so forth. They just don't do that today. It's strictly Air Force. No Army are involved in it.
So you enlisted in World War II, was currently active, or did you enlist after World War II?
No, peace treaties had already been signed, but we were in the occupational stage. So I became, when I was sent overseas to Japan, I was doing the occupational forces, and that's when I was as being in the Army Air Corps. We are not a physical, in my career, I'm not a physical fighting man, so to speak. I'm the man behind the gun.
So you gave a lot of support.
That's where we support.
So can you remember all the places you served during your military time?
I think I can.
So where was your first deployment?
My first assignment was, it no longer exists in that particular sense. It was San Antonio Army Air Corps, which was at San Antonio, Texas, which is now Lackland Air Force Base. Then I went to Scottsfield, Illinois for training as a radio operator. It was during the massive Mississippi River flood in 1947. We were pulled out of class, field sandbagged for 2 weeks. Our class had already graduated. We had a choice of remaining for 3 months or waiting for another class or go overseas. We chose overseas. I went to the Philippines, then to Japan, then back to the Philippines, to Guam later in June of 1948. Then they needed my specialty on Iwo Jima. I was sent to Iwo Jima, Central Air Base Iwo Jima.
Now, tell me about what that looked like. What did Iwo Jima look like?
Well, it was barren because there were no trees, only small bushes that had grown up after the skirmish had ended. And in the crater of Mount Suribachi, that's where the statue of the Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima was located at. I'm probably one of the only people living, maybe the only one, who actually stood on the base of this monument on Iwo Jima. From Iwo, I came back home, back to the States, and was assigned to Smoky Hill Air Force Base, Kansas. We closed that in October of 1949 and moved to Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana. And from there, in 1954, I was sent to Korea.
And that was your first active combat duty?
It was, I was in a combat zone, but I was not actually in combat. I carried a weapon and so forth, but I was 38 Special, but No, no combat.
And so tell me about some of the things that you were concerned about when you were in Korea. What caused you to be anxious or worry when you were in Korea?
Well, Korea, I was assigned to, my job in Korea was AFAC, Armed Forces Aid to Korea. They chose me because of my specialty, my experience is getting the job done and so forth. And so what I did was I built mess halls, messing facilities, dormitories, and housing facilities for orphans. That was my job. That was my sole purpose in Korea.
And is that when your electrical specialty came in, or was that later?
I was electrical specialist, electronic electrician, senior electrician, electronic supervisor all the time. I was the NCYC of AIO, they called it that then, Air Installations Operation, which is now Civil Engineers. And I've been an electrician all my life and an electrical lineman. But that was my job due to my specialty, getting the job done and how I operated. That was why I was chosen for these remote areas. So.
Now, this picture that I have here out of your military time is
that was taken
in
Korea.
Tell me about this picture. What do you think?
Well, that was one evening. I was peeling an apple or an orange at that particular time. I remember it very well. And some of my papasans, they're not in some more pictures. They always horse around and so forth. And that's what we were one cool fall afternoon. And that was just something like the family does, you know, just goof around and after the evening meal and so forth, before dark. And that's the way that picture right there occurred.
And did you have to service electrical poles or?
Yes.
Tell me about a time that you were on an electrical pole. I remember reading in an interview you had with one of the boys something that you had that you found regrettable.
Well, the voltage in Korea was a very peculiar voltage. It was 3,300, where here we have 41. We call it 4160 or 5,000 volts. There it was very peculiar. And just one day, I was coming back from a little project that I had completed and back to our compound, and a group of people gathered on the road in front of me, and I happened to look up, and there was a Korean signalman right on top of a pole, laying across the cross arms, across two of those 3,300 volts lines, and his body was smoking. His clothes were just falling off of him. They were, and that was one of the things that I could never understand how it happened. I stopped right then, and I prayed for the boy's family and whomever that everything would be all right. And, but that was one of the most regrettable things that in Korea that occurred. And the things that happened to me in Korea were all emotional. Emotional occurrences and experiences. The children and so forth, that was my main project, was the children, housing and feeding them, were the orphans. Orphans were our American servicemen's illegitimate children with Korean girls. And the Koreans, as far as an orphan goes, they are nothing but outcasts. Period. They're just outcasts.
So the Korean community wouldn't take care of them?
No.
So the Air Force or the military decided to give support and aid.
The Air Force Aid Society. The Air Force Aid Society and the Armed Forces Aid to Korea. And that's when I have spoken about these, the King's Daughters, which is I believe, a Catholic organization. I'm not sure, but it was a response to a letter that I had written to the editor, the Shreveport Times. And these ladies got a hold of that, and the day I left, on the 14th day of December, 1954, truckloads of clothing arrived there for those two people, and I don't know who took over then, but apparently it was a great success.
And so what was it like in December in Korea?
It was cold, like it is here, similar like it is here.
And from Korea, where did you go?
I went back to Barksdale, Air Force Base in Louisiana. And then from there, I went to Iceland.
And what did you do in Iceland?
I was an electrical lineman there, on a remote AC&W site, H1 or H2, 932nd AC&W site, with the big bubbles. Out there, two big bubbles for the aircraft. Now and then they'd fly between those bubbles, hit their AB, and blow the dust off the bubbles.
So is that why you hate to be cold, because you spent time in Iceland? Were you really cold
No,
there?
Iceland was really not all that cold. Korea, I guess, is the... Because I was young, the cold didn't bother me anyway, in Michigan either. It was a good, healthy tour.
Mm-hmm. This.
But Iceland is encircled by the Gulf Stream, and I think the average year-round temperature was only 39 degrees or something like that.
And is this picture of you on the rocks in front of this beautiful blue water, deep blue water?
Oh, that's...
Is that in Iceland?
Yeah, I was standing on one of the docks down in Keflavik, Iceland, where our main base was. I was 12 miles out from the main base. And that blue water was one of the abandoned docks. And right behind me there, the water was about 20 foot deep, and you could see the bottom just as clear. And right behind me, there was as I've told y'all before, there was about a 20 foot tiger shark just laying there, and some big halibut, these giant flounders.
Mm-hmm.
They were just laying there also. Every now and then, you could see them move a little bit, but I thought that was quite unique. But no, it wasn't that cold. You could walk around and it got 18 degrees twice there, and that was the coldest it got. You could walk around and dry. It was so dry you could walk around in shirt sleeves.
That's interesting, because you don't think of Iceland having that type of climate.
Well, it just touched the Arctic Circle right up on top.
Mm-hmm. So from Iceland, where did you go?
Iceland, I went to Michigan, Mount Clemens, Michigan, Selfridge Air Force Base, and from there, a year and a half later, I went north to, we activated another bomb wing, and I went to Oshkosh, Michigan, Wurtsmith Air Force Base, to set up and establish facilities and so forth for the new folks arriving. Then from there, I went to school, and they sent me to school for a change for a B-52 and the KC-135 fuel systems. And from there, I went to Blytheville, Arkansas, Blytheville Air Force Base. And then from there, from Blytheville, I can't remember which. Which one did I went to? But we went to. It escapes my mind. Knobnostra, Missouri, Whiteman Air Force Base. And then from Whiteman, which is a B-1 bomber base now, and from Whiteman, I went to Libya, to Africa. I served 18 months there. You know, when I came back, I went to Whiteman, and when I came back, I went to Vietnam.
When did you go to Vietnam? What year was that? Do you remember?
60. In 66, in the fall of 66, the fighting was all over.
What were your responsibilities in Vietnam?
I was the electrician, an electrician lineman supervisor. And I had to train and supervise young airmen and also do the managing the electrical facilities for the entire air base, which was always my responsibility, airfield lighting, the whole works, overhead lighting for the quarters, the whole works. And that was my responsibility. And
what base was that?
In Vietnam, it was Phan Rang Air Base, right off the South China Sea. And I applied for my retirement. They turned it down in Tonsonute Air Base in the first time. I reapplied the second time. They turned it down at PACAF headquarters in Honolulu, which is Pacific Air Command headquarters. And
why do you think they turned it down?
Due to my specialty, my knowledge, and there was only six of us in the entire Air Force with the dual AFSCs, which Air Force Specialty Code, our job titles, and they didn't want to let me go. So
they needed you to stay.
They wanted me to stay. They couldn't promote me, but they didn't want to let me go. I was frozen in grade for 15 years without a promotion. So I wrote to my congressman, Joe Wagner, 4th District, state of Louisiana. And I had gotten a piece of shrapnel in my instep of my left foot.
Tell me how that happened.
It caused a little tumor to grow there.
And how did you get the shrapnel?
It was like I dived over my bunker and a piece of shrapnel got me in the foot. I don't know why it didn't get me in the rear end.
So your housing area in the base was taking on
fire? That's the only time, yeah. We never got any incoming mail other than that afternoon. So I dived over my 6-foot wall plus 2 sandbags. And when it did, it went through the laces on my, what they call jungle boots. It's a nylon, green nylon mesh shoe with a rubber, mm-hmm. vulcanized rubber sole on it. And, but they wanted to get that little tumor off of my foot before I came back. So in the process, during this period, or when they made that decision, I went back to my office, typed up my letter to my congressman. I want it out. I wanted to go home. I want my retirement approved. And I went to the hospital the next day, to Cameron Bay Hospital. We didn't have, all we had was a little dispensary at Van Ring Air Base. And 5 days later, that correspondence went through channels to via U.S. mail to Jody Wagner's desk in Washington, D.C., and back to there in 5 days, which is absolutely unheard of through the military mail system. So, and I came home, and I left Vietnam on the 29th day of August, 1967. And it's a day that I could remember the rest of my life. I can't. Every time I think of it, I think still hear those kids screaming. The aircraft that took off ahead of us was taken down with small arms fire.
From the Viet Cong?
By the VC. And we could see this black smoke billowing before we took off. And that was my worst experience in my whole 20 years, 6 months, and 19 days of total active, continuous service. And I can't get it. And that's why you're here today, baby. It's because I told Mother one day that we just need another one. And that helped me at night. And it still does, because you're there. And then we came back, and I had to wait at McCord Air Force Base for 3 days for my retirement order to become effective. Then I came home, and nobody knew that I came home except my family. Because at that time, the people went to Canada. Like when I came home from Korea and Vietnam, the people spit at us and threw rocks at us.
Because
and that was
you
hard
were,
to take in that uniform.
Because you were military?
Because we were military. During the 50s, it was real, real bad. And on up into the 60s. See, during the 50s, we weren't allowed to wear a uniform in the town, per se. If we went back and forth to work, you wore civilian clothes. But that was the sentiment. It started against Harry Truman's regime. But how it got started or nothing, but if people only understood what a military man and his family have to go through, I think the sentiment would be a whole lot different. I know it would be 100% different. They don't understand what they go through, the sacrifices that they make, not only here at home, but when they're away from home.
Well, I know sometimes when we're out in public running errands, going to the store or if we're going out to lunch and you have your Air Force cap on, sometimes people will stop you. And say, thank you for your service.
Well, I always tell them. If they would have said that, if I could have heard those words, when I got off that aircraft and I came back from Vietnam, I said, I would have gotten down on my knees and I'd have kissed your shoes. And I still would.
Well, I did not ever know that. And so the very first time you said that to someone, I didn't understand it because personally, I'd always held our military personnel, our men and women who choose to serve, in such high regard. And so for you to explain that the general population of America didn't always have such a favorable opinion of military personnel, I found that very disturbing and shocking. But I am so pleased that as a whole, our country seems to support our military personnel now and understand a little better the sacrifices and do a lot to support them. So I do feel like that has turned around a little bit.
But I know that y'all had to make a lot of sacrifices at home too. And financially, because the military man they just don't get the pay compared to civilian pay. And a lot of people resent our retirement. Say, well, you're drawing Social Security and retirement pay. I said, I earned every penny of it.
Right. So are you, in retrospect, at almost 91 in a few days, how do you view your time in the military? Do you regret enlisting, or are you glad you did?
I'm proud that what little I did, I was not a combat soldier, but I am proud down in my soul of everything that I did to support my country, support the men who were up there fighting. I lost friends, and I lost two of my men in Vietnam. And it's just like with my own kids when I found out that they were just that close. And I have a bad night once in a while, but my wife wakes me up and I'm okay because I don't have any other problems, no drugs, no alcohol or anything. But I'm proud of being a retired U.S. serviceman who I supported and did everything I could for my country for 20 years, 6 months, and 19 days. And I'll never regret that.
Well, I'm proud of you, too.